We did not raise all of that money on our own. What we did was we partnered with our US operating partners. They raised a significant amount of the capital. And then we brought in our Canadian fund. And again, some of our US investors invested as well. So that's how we did our first deal. So a lot of people that want to get started in real estate, they're really like, they limit themselves because of these really large numbers. Don't allow that to scare you, right? Because this is a team sport and you can really take action and be part of these great assets if you structure it the right way.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Ava Benesaki is a small city girl who moved to the big city to follow her dreams and built a real estate private equity firm from the ground up. Lives in Canada. Ava, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sam. Hey, happy to be here.
Pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me where'd you start, where are you now, and how'd you get there?
Started in a small town. I'm now in Vancouver, Canada, in a big city. And I got there by starting in residential real estate and scaling up to multifamily.
You were in residential for how long?
About a decade.
A decade. That's a long time. What did you do in residential?
I was helping people buy and sell residential real estate.
Got it. Was there ever a light bulb moment, or what was the light bulb moment? Because clearly you're out of it, where you said, hey, there's got to be a better way.
You know what? A couple light bulb moments for me was I was helping person by person kind of invest in real estate. I dealt with lots and lots of investors. Everybody wants to invest in real estate. A lot of people don't really know where to begin and so forth. So I was kind of guiding people along the way. And my kind of vision for my life was to help people by the masses. So essentially now what I do now, I co-founded my company, CPI Capital. And that's where I kind of shifted, pivoted my focus to real estate private equity, where I could help hundreds of investors at a time invest in real estate, but on a passive side.
What was that transition like for you? I mean, there's a lot of steps between, hey, I'm a residential realtor and I teach people how to invest in real estate, to now we're doing large commercial projects. What was that process like?
The process was really exciting and educational, and it didn't come overnight. It took a lot of grinding. And again, education, I went through this massive educational journey. You know what? I co-founded my company from a fundamental problem that I seen existed for real estate investors. And again, that goes back to everybody wants to put their money into real estate, but a lot of busy professionals don't really have the time, knowledge, or experience on where to begin, right? A lot of people don't want to be landlords. A lot of people don't want to have to deal with the calls at night and, hey, my toilets and tenants, if you will. So when I kind of shifted, again, it went from me kind of realizing this problem that existed, and I really wanted to find a solution to that problem. And that was me building my real estate private equity firm, really figuring out the legalities of it, cross-border, because I'm dealing with partnering with Canadians to acquire U.S. multifamily assets, and again, partnering with U.S. investors as well. So I can go on and on about kind of the trials and tribulations I went through and how I did it, but I'll...
No, that's good. You're answering really the questions on that. Since you brought it up, the legalities of, you know, developing or having investors on both sides, you know, in the US, in Canada, what was your solution to that?
Yeah, well, you're dealing with cross-border, right? So two different taxations, two different governing bodies, two different securities compliance. So trust me when I say I spoke to 40, 50 cross-border tax accountants, cross-border lawyers, and really got my corporate structure aligned to be able to service both US and Canadian investors. Canadians, really exciting kind of pain point that I relieved from them is they have access to U.S. multifamily assets, to U.S. real estate, because there's incredible opportunity for all those U.S. people living. You have it right in your own backyard. And what I did essentially was relieve them from pain points like double taxation and worrying about, you know, where do I invest in the U.S. and how do I access these great investment opportunities?
Right. So what was the solution? Is there a legal? I'm asking more specific here. Was there a legal solution, such as, you know, the way you created the LLCs? Was there a certain fund model? What does that look like for a finished product?
Yeah, so we use a fund of a fund structure where we pull together Canadian capital and we deploy it as one investor into the entity that owns the asset on the US side. Now, there's a treaty that exists between Canada and the US. Okay, so if you put your fund, if you incorporate your fund of fund structure properly, what happens is the CRA on this side of the border sees it as a flow through entity and Canadians are relieved dollar for dollar on double taxation. Now, if a Canadian was to go and invest into a, you know, project in the US that was formed under an LLC, well, that would trigger double taxation. So there's not a lot of education that exists here on this side of the border when it comes to investing in the US. Right. So my company, when we first started, building our real estate private equity firm, it was all about the education, educating investors, how everything works, and really making it streamlined in their minds on how the legalities and the taxation works to really simplify the process.
Right. So let me get this right. So your Canadian investors invest in, what did you call it, a CRA?
No. The Canadian investors in a single purpose vehicle.
Got it. SPV. Okay. So they invest in an SPV, whatever that your equivalent of an LLC is. They invest in that SPV. And that SPV then, of course, you know, invests across the border in the U.S. What do your investors on this side of the line, what do they invest in that same entity?
They're actually investing into the single purpose vehicle that actually owns the asset.
Right. So that SPV was formed in Canada or was formed in the United States?
Formed in Canada.
Okay. So what happens to the American investor you're both American, but the United States investor that invests in the Canadian SPV? What's their taxation like?
So they don't even touch Canada. It's super, super streamlined process for them. The US investor invests exactly into the entity that owns the asset. Nothing to do with the Canadian side. Two separate entities.
Got it. Okay. So when you're dealing with a US investor, you're going to steer them directly into the LLC that owns the asset.
Correct.
And then, so you can bring two sets of investors, and then your other set of investors from the Canadian side is going to be in their own separate SPV that also invests as a single investor in that same LLC that owns the asset.
Yes, correct.
Right.
Correct.
So you have two separate pools of limited partners. Okay. Thank you. All right. That clarifies how that works. I appreciate you taking the time to educate me on that, because I wouldn't have known, obviously.
But one thing I want to highlight is you kept using the word LLC. The LLC doesn't really work with we cannot use LLCs for Canadians to be relieved from that double taxation. So we do have to be very careful how we set up the entity, single purpose vehicle here in the U.S.
So what is the SPV? What is your equivalent of an SPV then?
We don't even have LLCs actually in Canada. We call it a limited partnership.
Okay. Very interesting. Cool. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I love that. I love that you've taken the time to figure that nuance out, because that's confusing. I mean, I'm a guy that knows enough to be dangerous in this space. And even that's still just a little bit nuanced. Like, wait, which way are we doing this again? Just because I haven't had to learn that yet. So that's absolutely intriguing. Tell me about your first deal you got done. It's one thing to have an idea. It's one thing to educate investors. How did you convince your investors, especially in the, not convince, but how did you approach your investors on the Canadian side to say, hey, look, I'm onto something and you should be part of this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that was quite an experience, because when I went back to all my investors and I started talking about, hey, give me your money. I'm going to take your money. I'm going to go to the U.S. and I'm going to purchase multifamily in the U.S. across, you know, literally across the border. They're thinking like, what are you talking about? This is, what the heck are you talking about? So trust me when I say it was difficult to convert. And that's where we started building our educational platform, so people could really grasp, okay, what are they talking about here? And why are they going to the US? So essentially, the same business model, I just would like to touch point on this. Same business model here in Canada doesn't work. You cannot achieve cash flow and appreciation at the same time. There's very strict landlord laws here and so forth. So education to try to convert people. And then essentially, our first deal that we did was in Orlando, Florida. It was a really exciting Class A asset, actually. And we ended up bringing our investors onto that. But what we did was we went large. Our first deal, we went really big. Okay. So we actually started our company not by doing the original way of doing things, where people usually start off with, like, you know, a duplex and then a fourplex, and then they go to, you know, a 10 unit. We're not even talking about institutional multifamily assets that are 100 plus units. We wanted to bring an institutional asset to our investor community from day one. Yeah. So essentially, that's what we did. We brought them a Class A. It was a 350 unit asset in Orlando, Florida, and presented it on a platter to our investor community.
Talk to me through that size of acquisition, amount of capital you had to raise. Give me all the nitty gritty if you don't mind.
Yeah, for sure. So when you go to investors and you say, hey, I want you to invest with me, what's the first question they usually ask? Okay, show me your track record.
Right.
Like, show me some numbers that have actually been achieved before. You know, people are forecasting all these great returns. Keeping in mind, Canadian investors, they're really excited about a 5-6% annualized return. That's a great investment for them. That's an amazing investment for them. So when you start talking 20 or 15, 20% annualized returns, most cases they're like, this is too good to be true. What are you talking about? So essentially, on our first deal, what we did strategically was we figured out what regions do we want to be in, right? We've been doing real estate in Canada. We had about $100 million worth of transactions done here on this side of the border. We have our track record here, but we didn't have the track record that we needed in the US. So the next best thing was to find and partner with our operating partners, people who are the asset managers, the boots on the ground, who've actually been through a full cycle in order to piggyback off of their track record and show our investor community, hey guys, look at the returns that have actual returns that have been achieved and check out the actual numbers. So it was a $92 million asset in Orlando, Florida. As I mentioned, it was large institutional 350 unit. The capital raise was $32 million. We did not raise all of that money on our own. What we did was we partnered with our US operating partners. They raised a significant amount of the capital. And then we brought in our Canadian fund. And again, some of our US investors invested as well. So that's how we did our first deal. So a lot of people that want to get started in real estate, they're really like, they limit themselves because of these really large numbers. Don't allow that to scare you, right? Because this is a team sport and you can really take action and be part of these great assets if you structure it the right way.
Right. That's absolutely. One more question, and I should have asked this earlier, but you hit on it again, and it reminded me that I didn't ask it. For the US-based investors that invest directly into the, which here will be probably be an LLC that owns the asset, how does that work for you staying in control and in front of your investor base? Because I know a lot of us that do fund to funds, I've participated both myself in a fund to funds model and being the fund sponsor. We want to stay in front of our investors. How do you do that?
When you say stay in front of our investors, as far as...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times, you know, if we come in as a fund of funds, the operator won't even know who the members of that fund are necessarily, right? Because we're all investing in our own fund and this fund comes as a single investor in that entity.
Correct.
Whereas if you have a pool of other investors on the outside also investing in that entity, now you've got your sponsor in direct contact or knows who your other investors are. Is that correct or am I missing something?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, exactly. They would know who your investors are in most cases. But I do all the communications with my investors.
Okay.
So to stay in front, yeah. So I'm the one sending them their monthly distributions. I'm the one sending them their monthly updates. You know what I mean? So I still take over the full communication and that's how I stay in front of my investors. Good question.
Okay. Very, very
good. Do not hand them off because we have a very tight-knit investor community, right? So we are this educational, like every week sending emails out. We're very hands-on. All of my investors have my personal cell phone number, to be honest with you. So when it comes to that, yeah, I totally take over the communication and I'm hands-on every step of the way.
Which is what we want. Exactly what you want when you, because a pool of investors, that's a hard-earned network. And you don't want to turn loose of that. You know.
That's what makes our business go around, right? Is really taking those relationships and growing them and strengthening them as they invest in more and more deals with you.
For sure. Talk to me about resilience and the belief that you could actually do this. Because I see enough people in the residential real estate space, especially in the realtor world, that are just like, you know, completely, you know, narrow. Like they got the blinders on. Like, well, it's just residential. Well, I couldn't ever do that. They have no idea that this great big world of commercial real estate even exists or that they could even participate in it.
Yes.
How did you overcome that?
How did I overcome that? You know what? I've always been a big dreamer, I guess. I've always had kind of an entrepreneurial like spirit that was, I think, born within me. But essentially what it comes down to is surrounding yourself with the right people, you know, figure out what you want to do. Who do you want to help? What problem do you want to solve? And then take it step by step and learn the process. But for people who have limiting beliefs, right? As I was kind of mentioning, when they limit that belief on themselves and they're kind of stuck in this same lane their whole life. It's really about having big dreams. And every time you're fearful, letting that fear kind of empower you to take the next step and take the next step forward onto something bigger and better, where you can help more people or you can kind of scale yourself on an active level, because it's really exciting when it begins. And it's only your fear that's really stopping you and being, that's the only thing that's in your way.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Ava, thank you for taking the time to come on today. This has been a blast. I certainly appreciate it. Let's jump here into a final few questions. When it comes to real investing in real estate, what's one mistake you can help our listeners avoid and how would you avoid it?
Okay. Do not try to reinvent the wheel by yourself. Reach out to somebody who's already been there, done that, and follow their guidance.
Right. That's great. Next question. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Educating.
Love it. Last question for you. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
So I am super active on LinkedIn, Ava Benesaki, or you can check out my website. It's www.cpicapital.ca, or my email is ava@cpicapital.ca.
Awesome. Thank you, Ava, for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.